I had to do my own artist development that started with a four track. So when I purchased my first four track and a turntable to just rap to over record. Instrumentals, I found out who I was. Mm. I found out my vocal tone I wanted to use. I found out how my flow should be. You know, I found out everything because I was not an artist. Wow. Not a musical artist for, you know, I'm a hip hop fiend.
Right.
I studied everything. You know, I'm a breakdancer. I'm a graffiti artist. I did every element of the culture. But I never truly considered being a rapper or artist. So when I started developing myself, I learned how to be Thurston Howell. You know, they kind of came out naturally, but from all the practicing, I learned my style.
So, man, so you just mentioned something about you was a graffiti artist, breakdancer, graffiti artist. What was your tag name?
My tag name was Raya.
Raya.
And it's crazy because
Is it any tags still exist?
Nah, just photos. I wasn't a major tagger, like I wasn't a big famous artist or nothing like that. You know, nor did I
what put did Raya that much mean, time. What mean?
It just were the letters that I could write the best. The R. I think most graffiti writers were like that. It was the letters you knew how to really do the best.
So, right.
I used to tag Cuba Rock Ski.
Wow. But then you know, I went back and forth.
I never tagged. I tried it and it was terrible at it. And I did the trains
and everything with my people. Cut the holes in the train yard.
You were saying some of your first charges was at the train yard?
Yeah, some of my first charges was bombing the trains. You know, in the layups, in the yard.
Yeah, I used to go out with dudes that's bombing.
Honey cans of spray paint. You know, helping my friend Has do the top to bottoms, coloring things.
Crazy. Hip-hop is crazy. So this is all part of hip-hop. That's why I bring it up. Breakdancing, it's a fabric. If hip-hop... Hip-hop is a cloth. These are all the fabrics inside of that cloth that makes it.
And I was telling him about Bogota because he mentioned Germany. I was like, Bogota, which shocked me. It's 11 million people. New York City is 12 million people. 11 million people in Bogota. Number one city in the world with graffiti.
Yeah.
Wow. Sanctioned by the government. You want to put graffiti in your wall, they'll give you. You got to have... You walk through this, you drive through the city, everywhere, beautiful graffiti.
Yes.
Not just anyone
tagging. Real art.
Real art.
Real art.
It is art.
But when I seen that, They just wanted
to make it graffiti and just give it like
I'm
a
in the right
negative.
City. If you're a hip hop artist and you walk in and there's graffiti, they support the culture. You're in the right city.
Exactly.
So in the early 80s, I was going back and forth from Miami to New York, right? So I used to go out there tagging early 80s. So now, Wynwood, which is Wynwood. Like the art district of Miami, I'm actually from that neighborhood.
Yes. Oh, wow.
So there's a graffiti museum now in Wynwood, and they have the timeline of where graffiti started in Wynwood. I am the beginning of the timeline in the museum.
That's what's up.
I didn't even know that.
I know that you've been, again, featured in Art Basel and Basel and all
own,
of that.
My own events.
Yeah.
I had for several years. De Niro tell you, my grandmother's home was in the middle of Wynwood.
Right.
When the whole Basel thing started developing, I turned my grandmother's home into a venue.
Wow.
I covered it with art. We did free concerts, free food, free drinks. You know, I do the Low Life Love and Loyalty weekends in Miami for Art Basel. We also do it in Orlando.
Wow.
So, you know, but when I saw the whole neighborhood transforming, this is all around the time me and De Niro started working.
Yeah.
That's when it began.
That neighborhood used to be hot.
Yeah, but it turned into like...
Now it's
all we did was evolve gentrified. With it. Now it's unbearable over there. It's like, it's out of control. It's too much. You know what I mean? It's just everywhere. Like, basically the culture of it all is gone.
Mm.
But it's like, it's just... oversaturated art everywhere, but I turned my grandmother's house into a venue.
That's
man
fire.
With big successful you know events for many years.
Well, it's great that I know the recognition side of it, and again you're part of this 50 year of again absolutely in that fabric, entwined in this fabric from not only your music but also from the art side of it. And then I know you did something with Polo.
You know, for those not familiar with history, so I'm one of the co-founders of the Low Life Crew of New York City.
Right.
You know.
Tell them what you guys did.
We robbed all the stores for the Polo. You know, we ran up in everything. We went to all the clubs, you know, poloed out. 100 dudes wearing the same shirt. Caused havoc in the...
Brownsville.
So it's like, but it's a very well-known story throughout New York City.
Yes.
So I actually... became a model for the company of Polo.
That's
after
crazy.
Several years.
That's crazy. Would you think, like, could you ever have imagined that? Just think of what this hip hop culture has done for us.
I couldn't imagine and nothing on this journey.
You
that's
you basically
right
just
now.
Told me you used to go rob all the stores for the Polo gear, and then basically Polo had to realize that you're behind this
because not this just
movement,
not just it's
this
not
low
just
life
about
movement.
What happened in the past when I became an artist?
Yeah,
then I came as myself, you know, with my covers and everything. So my entire image was Polo, right. Everything. So me touring the world and all that, I infected the world with it.
Absolutely.
So it's like, if you look closely at hip hop now, Polo is the official uniform of hip hop.
Yes.
Everybody's wearing it everywhere. The wildest part about this whole thing is that, you know, they did Ralph Lauren's documentary of his life and put me in his story. Wow. And gave me my own segment in his life story documentary.
In the book too, right?
Yeah, and the Polo book last year, I was on billboards all over the world for the advertisement. I'm talking about 10-story banners and, you know, all
ever
over
since
the
I
world.
Know
hey, don't you guys think Robin is going to get you that shit? This is a one-of-one story.
No, that's a cool note, but you know the cultural
it's
impact.
It's also my transition that allowed that to happen because I had a transition in my life where I became different. I became righteous. I got knowledgeable.
Sure.
I changed my ways, and I helped many other people change those ways. You know, I became productive within my community, you know, within everything, just my attitude and my mentality.
Yeah.
So that is the reason they included me, because they saw me in photos with my family, my children.
Everything.
They wasn't just following what I was doing streetwise for me to glorify that. They saw who I became as a man. And that's why I know they allowed me to be a part of things.
Right, but Polo's a big company. They didn't have to. I give them a lot of credit for doing that because they definitely, like, I've been passed over so many different things because of what they feel, the affiliation, or they think of how you are, and they don't want to be associated with your brand or, you know, with the brand or anything. They embraced it because they realized this hip-hop culture was that strong.
I mean, it's the greatest culture that ever happened to humanity.
It's the biggest thing in the world.
And it bridged the gap.
Nothing
gaps
bigger
of the
than
hip hop. Currency is the only thing.
You think currency is bigger than hip hop?
I mean, it's everywhere, and they'll kill you for currency before hip hop.
You know what? I will give you that. You're the first person.
The currency that hip hop created for you.
But we have hip hop in every part of the world, man. But I will say, maybe there'll be little places that doesn't have hip hop. So when they do have some type of currency,
I think hip hop is just because it infects people immediately and consumes their whole thought process forever after that.
No, it's over.
Once I got a taste of it, it's like.
I tell everyone, I say hip hop was the Pied Piper. You know that story? Yeah. The Pied Piper came and took all the kids.
With the rats.
That's hip hop.
Took the rats.
Well, the rats, but then they didn't want to pay him. Then he took your kids.
Oh, wow.
Well, listen, last night.
So they didn't pay him.
That's crazy.
All right, leave the fucking rats. I'm taking your kids. And they all love the music, and he took all the kids
hip-hop.
Out. That's hip hop.
Yeah, but now.
When you say that, I just come. So last night, I get, I'm driving back from Z's game. I get a FaceTime call from Jose, my oldest son. He's 36 years old, Dominican Republic. And when he's putting the new video I dropped with, and he's a bunch of girls in there, I guess his wife's friends, they're all dancing to him. And he said, that's my father, hip hop. And when I realized that, I'm like, that's the power of hip hop.
That's the power.
Your old man is still rocking. I'm still, they asked, how old is he? Hip hop keeps you young.
Yeah.
I told him, I was talking to him about the beautiful thing about hip hop, it's a never ending dream to fucking chase. I love it. Yeah. Those years you go, I want this pride, you don't get the money. The next year, all the blessings that come. Then you get what I'm saying? We discuss about our journey. So many journeys, but it's an incredible dream to chase, bro.
Yeah, it was a conversation I remember with Russell Simmons and my brother, and we're sitting there talking about rock and roll and other genres. This is early day hip hop. And I never forget because my brother, Irv, he broke it down to Russell. And I always keep this in the back of my head. He said, we get younger and older. He said, those rock and roll guys, they can't get younger and older. Mm-hmm. So what he means by that is demographically, I'm 56. I'm still fucking hip hop. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be 70 and still be hip hop. My kids started at 10. Their kids are going to start at 5. Mm-hmm. And it's going both directions from a demographic standpoint. And that's what the beauty of this hip hop business is. We get younger and older at the same damn time.
Look at those two old rappers just dropped a project at age 69, crushing it, touring all over Europe. You see those two English rappers? Oh, I gotta show you these two guys doing trap, crushing it. Two guys dressed up, suited like mobsters, millions of views, signed to a label, touring.
That's
crushing
crazy.
Clubs, taking shots at the club, wilding, young kid crowd. The whole crowd is young. When I seen that, I said, that's hip-hop. Well, that's the power of hip-hop.
If that's happening.
No, that's happening as we speak.
Everything is happening at the same time.
At the same time.
There's no rules. There's nothing that doesn't exist at this point.
That's right.
Everything is just.
So you think about it, you got to make it and go.
I mean, just do you. Don't worry about what nobody else is doing. Like,
that's right.
Stick to what you believe, what you love, because I do what I love.
How many albums you have out?
30-something.
Oof.
You know, between albums and mixtapes, I dropped so many.
Yeah, I wanted to bring some up because of the old stuff with.
Oh yeah, I saw, and they nice. I've been seeing them. They
Chris,
got skills.
They just popped off. At age, I think 171. The other 60, they're boys. Obviously, that was your grandfather. You're but, like, what the?
You know, there's something when you say you got 30 albums, right? 30 albums, it's like, that's a lifetime of work, right? Of words. Just think about it. Like, you know, I remember they put Jay-Z's book together of all his lyrics, and it was like a huge book. It's like, that's what you're talking about. It's probably even bigger than that. But what
my latest album is called Thoughts Skillustrated.
Thoughts Skillustrated.
All my albums have a skill title. My first album is Skillionaire.
Skillionaire.
My second album is Skillosopher. My third album is Skilligan's Island. Then I had a Serial Skiller, Skillitary, License to Skill, Skilluminati. But there's so many.
Everything
I have a
skill.
Book full of skill titles for every coming album. You know, like, I'm fully prepped. My film company is called Skillusion Films.
Skillusion.
Shout out my brother, Box Low, who's my partner on that.
Shout out Box,
you know, my record, my label is Skillionaire. Because
that's fine.
I don't need anything to do what I want to do. So my skills is what always made me rich.
You own all of those, that whole catalog.
I own everything.
So I was trying to explain. There's someone I met, and I was telling you a story. I wanted to make sure I did it on air because it was very empowering to me. It was someone I met in the BMI Awards just recently in Miami. I forget his name. It's a rapper from Memphis. And he had an award, and he's just sitting there, and he comes over to me, you know, telling me he's in his 40s. And he said he did a bunch of records back early 90s, you know, and just put them out. He owned them, though, and he put them out, and he still owned them. And when these distribution companies like Adventure Music came out, he said he took those records and put them out through there because he didn't have a deal. So he put them out through all of these different platforms, but he owns them. And he said, he couldn't believe it. He was very emotional because he's like, Drake heard one of his records, sampled the record, called him up, paid for the clearance, and that's why he's getting this award, and that's why he's making money to live his life now. But Drake and 21 Savage used one of his records. And this is what I try to, I mean, I can't emphasize this enough to all the independent artists, and that's why I love your story so much, is because you put out all this music, you're still putting out, because music is timeless. And here it is. All it takes is someone to hear one of your Skillionaires, or, you know what I mean? Yeah. You know, titles, albums. Take one of those records, reuse it, and it could change everything. And it's really not about you. Mm-hmm. It's really about your kids. Like, it's around who you passing this to. So it's not about what we're doing today for us to go get a house, a car.
The generational wealth.
It's who we passing it to. And what you just told me, basically, you have a 30-year catalog that's basically going to be passed to your kids. See, we didn't, in our cultures, in black and brown, we never was, what do we give after we leave this earth is what it's all about.
Most of us didn't know, you know.
We
our parents
know.
Did not know.
My parents,
didn't
know.
Before them knew even less, you know.
Exactly.
My parents come from Puerto, you know, my grandparents are from Puerto Rico, Jibaros, living on camps. And when they came to New York and America, they came to the projects, they came to luxury.
Yeah.
So they made it.
Right.
So they didn't see beyond that. Or my grandmother had a second grade education, mm-hmm. you know. So it was to that extent. So they weren't able to teach my parents much, So, you know, the little my parents learned, they learned from the street, and that's all they taught me.
Right. You know? So, you know, one of the things I would tell you to tell your kids is make sure they learn the business because it's theirs. Mm-hmm. It's not for any other reason because when you're no longer here, they have to either take it or they may want to sell it. Right? I see it all the time. Mm-hmm. Not just black and brown, right? White. It doesn't matter. The kids get past this. The person that made it died. And then someone buys it from them. And now it's no longer owned by the right people and controlled by the right people. And then that's, to me, is when it gets to a gray area, if you understand.
But there's also the fact that they won't have the same passion for it to be able to monetize it the way you would have.
Right.
So they might give it up because it's just sitting there collecting.
That's
dust.
What happens to most of them. So they don't it know it. Sense. That's why I'm telling tell you, kids if you the teach same. Them. But if they learn the business.
My kids have these meetings every week. Like,
yeah.
I'm right. Write this down. Everybody's sitting at the table with a book. These are your jobs. This is what you must know.
Yeah.
So I'm constantly educating them to that understanding.
It's either that.
The way times
it's
are
either
now.
That or you say, I don't care. See, if you said that while you're alive and in sound mind and you told your kids that their job is to carry out your wishes, that's it. But if you care about your body of work and you don't want it in the wrong hands, you should tell them, here's how I make money from it. I'm not thinking you're going to continue to make new records, but this is something you're going to pass to your kids and so on because it has no time limit. It's going to be here forever. And if you keep that, the business side right, it's forever. It's not just now, and it'll generate money forever.
Correct.
And that is the beauty of what you did in a 30-year span. Whether you knew it or not, you're here now. It's no turning back. So it's like we should be always telling our kids about that part. And I feel you know, what you did is a great accomplishment.
A part of everything I do.
Yeah.
You know, I do a lot of film production as well.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter's the makeup artist. My son works the camera.
Yeah.
My wife helps with the organizing and, you know, just production management. My other son is a comedian acting. So everybody's involved. And I'm talking about.
I want to meet your son. I'm about to do a movie called Bodega Comedy.
For real?
I promise you, comedy.
Oh, he's a clown. He's
so
a clown.
I need, and he's Latin, so he's gonna be able to speak. Now, he's gonna be able to speak.
Nah, they don't have. None of them.
No
have
Spanish.
That. Nah, I only have it because of my grandparents. You
I
know?
Got it.
Even my mother was straight New York.
I know Spanish. I understand, but I didn't know. Maybe he.
Yeah, they don't even have the Spanglish.
My daughter's half Puerto Rican.
What are you, man? I always thought you were Puerto Rican.
No, black, Trinidadian, and Filipino.
All right.
And Filipino. My father was Trinidadian and Filipino. And my mother's black. And then I married my daughter. I had a baby with my ex-wife. She's Puerto Rican. Mm-hmm. So my daughter's half Puerto Rican. She understands it. She doesn't speak it. I tell her, learn it, because it's just a numbers thing. Mm-hmm. The Latinos, the growth, the accelerated growth of the Latino community, the accelerated growth of the Chinese community. We should know those two languages. For business reasons. You're going to probably more than likely be working for a Latino or a fucking Chinese person. That's what I tell my kids if they don't understand it. It's just math. It's numbers. That's all it is.
I remember when me and Denever were first working the projects and working on everything, one of our conversations was, do you know what's the number one spoken language in the country at the time?
Mm.
What we say because of the numbers? It wasn't English and it wasn't Spanish. It was Spanglish.
Spanglish.
Because nobody spoke complete Spanish or English that was Latino.
Right.
So now Spanglish was the language of this country that was dominant.
You know, you say that, and here's MTV gives Bad Bunny the award for the biggest artist in America. Like, think about that, how big that is for the Latino community.
Look, they just gave Shakira, the VMA just gave Shakira the Lifetime Achievement Award that they were never giving Latinos that.
Never.
And the regular VMAs, we ain't talking about the Latin VMAs.
They're breaking
Latin VMAs.
The Latinos are breaking barriers for everything, and it's time. It's just like anything else. It's the evolution. It's the right time. And that's why I'm trying to, when I did everything, I always tell De Niro, this is black and brown, because that unity is unstoppable. If they understand that, you know, in this damn country we live
all
in.
All about the unity. You know, it's crazy. I came down here. One of my main reasons was to be a part of the Puerto Rock Steady, right?
Oh, man.
So Crazy Legs has set up a panel discussion this Thursday. It was for Cornell University's archives, but it was about the Latinos' contribution to hip hop. So, you know, Charlie Chase is there.
Sure.
Whipple Whip. You know, a lot of legendary Latin artists. And the main thing that was spoke about is how, you know, in our time, Grandmaster DST broke it down the greatest for me. And the understanding I left with that day is like, in our time, because so many people claim, oh, we started this, this was that. But everything has always existed under the sun.
Yes.
Even breakdancing.
Yes.
Like, you know, they got footage now in the 30s of people doing some form of acrobatic dance or whatever. But in our time, the contributions of Latinos and all that is what created this as a culture.
Yeah.
Before, yeah, there were graffiti artists before. Yeah, there were breakers before. There was, but it was not a culture. It didn't exist under the same category as one. But now it does because of Black and Brown.
Yes.
So would I think it would have been different if one didn't exist within it.
I agree.
I don't think it would have worked
out.
We
grew up in Hollis. There was Latinos, there was Haitians, Jamaicans. It was a melting pot of all types of cultures. And I'm sure you in Brownsville, you're Puerto Rican. I'm sure you're dealing with the same type of scenario.
Nah, it was only Black and Jamaican. And,
yeah, you know, Jamaican. That's what I mean. Haitians, you're going to get the Haitians, Latinos. Jamaicans, and Blacks. That's all it is. And a couple Latin people there, that's it. But there was absolute real contribution from the Latinos in this culture. And it's like, again, you said, De Niro said something earlier because he said technically Latino hip hop probably started about 25 years, maybe 30 years, Latino not 50 years, because you didn't get the opportunities. That's all.
It started in the beginning.
Yeah.
Mr. Schick, the Mean Machine, the song called Disco Dream. This is in the beginning of hip-hop.
See?
Now, I communicate with Mr. Schick a lot now. You know, much respect for me. He's a pioneer. I idolize people like that. So when he tells me the story of the Mean Machine, the actual group,
right,
everybody looked Black.
But they wasn't.
Everybody was Spanish. Yeah. It was either Puerto Rican or from St. Croix, and that blew my mind.
You know, it's crazy because I say this all the time. Only in mainstream hip-hop, I'm trying to, like, not the underground scene, but the mainstream hip-hop, you would probably think it's just Pun and Joe, right? Mm-hmm. You didn't realize, like, guys like even a Fabulous is Dominican. Like, he never would mention it. Until now, when it's acceptable. So they kind of hid. So when you say that, they hid from that being Latino just because they want the acceptance of this whole culture called hip-hop because they're doing it. So they hid it to kind of get in. And I understand that.
I heard that a lot as well.
Yeah, you get in where you
fit
in.
That's one thing I refused to do was to hide it.
Hide it.
I put it on Front Street. That's why, you know, I was spitting Spanish rhymes anywhere I went. Like I said, I went to the Puerto Rock Steady the other night. When they asked me to get on stage, all I gave them was Spanish.
Yeah.
And that's because this is Puerto Rock Steady right now. I got to give you what we supposed to be known for. I'm going to give you that language, that second tongue or whatever. But also because I'm proud. And I never had that problem growing up in Brownsville where I had to hide who I was.
Right.
Because that's what made me special. Especially with the
made
women.
Made you different.
You know what I mean? With the
oh,
women.
Oh, yeah.
I'm
they
like,
want that Latin lover?
Yeah, they want him. They want him right there, you know? I ain't had to talk.
He'll,
and
he'll
things
eat
like
the
that.
Box.
Yeah. I don't know about that part.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's all they saw us as once
oh,
upon
yeah.
a time. They thought that's
no
what
question.
All
the
Latin brothers did.
The Latin dudes, that's what they was doing. They was eating it. They was eating early.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Niggas wasn't eating it. Niggas was not eating it. Shit, that shit is the evolution. That is part of the evolution, you know. And you know what really, even for me, like, what made me change that mindset or think differently was traveling. Mm-hmm. When you travel, I'm a light-skinned Black dude, but when I traveled, I got a lot of people thought I was Latin. But when I traveled and then I go into these other countries and you would hear, oh, they're this, that. Man, the blacker you were, the more they fucked with you. When I left this country and went to overseas, the blacker you were, the more those countries fucked with you. Mm-hmm. Where in America, it was nothing like that. And I'm looking at these dudes like, wow. I gotta give a story. BJ, he was never like, he never, you know, would fuck with no white girl.
Wow.
Black dude, you know, shout out BJ, what up, nigga? You know what I'm saying? Then all of a sudden, when he seen the love he was getting from it, and you out in these places, that's all it is.
Let me get a two-piece fries, white meat, white
all
meat.
White meat.
All white meat.
And a biscuit. Put some honey on it in there, too. Hey. Put a little honey in there.
Sweetie.
But you know what I'm saying? It changed the mindset, but it really, traveling is really one of my biggest educators for me, personally.
Mm, likewise.
When I left this country, went to other places, you thought Brownsville was bad. Nah, you seen real poverty.
Me and De Niro went, he took me to Peru.
Yeah.
I remember we were staying in a hotel where across the street was a hospital, right? Mm. And I remember seeing the hospital's laundry drying on the roof on clotheslines.
Wow.
Where does that happen at? I seen people washing their clothes in the river.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I seen all sorts of poverty. I could not. We saw homeless kids, 8, 9 years old.
Yeah.
You remember that? Yeah. In the street.
In the street.
I remember when we landed in the airport. The airport looked worse than an old New York City train station.
Wow.
We went to the radio station, right? The major radio station.
This is where
station.
De Niro's bringing you.
This is in Peru. We went to the radio station, and this is the major station in Peru.
Wow.
My little home studio looked better than that.
Yeah.
But everything was working. It was still functioning. I'm talking about the whole place, you know?
Yeah.
So, but I learned, I went home with a whole different perspective.
Nah,
I'm like, Brandon, y'all living in luxury
we good.
Compared to this.
This is great. And I try to, you know, I'm going to put a foundation together that does that for kids. That's something that I really want to do. All the inner city kids, I want to take groups of them and just bring them around out of the country to another parts of the, you know what I'm saying? And let them see. I mean, I'd love to go to Chicago and take all these gang members and let them see. They think they got it bad in Chirac and all of that shit. You know what I'm saying? It's a lot worse.
Yeah.
It's a lot worse. I mean, you blessed and understand that, and maybe that'll change the mindset, because it did, like, it just changed you. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure, like, your history was super rough.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I had a history, again, I grew up with a loving family. My mother and father had nothing but love. Mm-hmm. And they stayed together forever. And I had eight of us. So I had brothers and sisters. I'm number 7 out of 8. Irv's number 8. But at the end of the day, when you went home, we had love. So most kids don't have that. Mm-hmm. So I know I'm blessed for that on top of that, you know, on top of the blessings. But that is even a more blessing, because when you leave this country and you see these things, it was eye-opening, man. Mm-hmm. It was fucking like, whoa. And I did it with some kids already. I took a bunch of fighters' boxes. They never did nothing. I put them in, like, the best hotels. But I let them see things so they could understand there's another side of life.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just where you could get out of this environment. You could do more.
I grew up that way, man, thinking the whole world was the same.
Yeah.
You know, I grew up in the dysfunctional household. The drug-addicted families and parents. You know, my father died. And I was 3 of an overdose.
Wow.
You know, my mom's remained on heroin most of her life.
Mm.
So it was like when I went to visit her brothers or her sisters, it was the same situation everywhere I went.
Right.
So, you know, I only went from project to project. If I have family there and the project over here. So I'm thinking the whole world is the same until I started venturing out. And hip-hop, man. Hip-hop is what really educated me to everything.
Hip-hop
opened my mind. Like, my ignorance was very major at a point.
Did you think you was going to live past 25?
Not at all. I've been on that.
When I say that, I never thought I'd get to 25.
Mm-hmm.
Here I am 56, and now it's no stopping me. I feel I'm going to make 106. But when we was adolescents and we're kids, this is what we're thinking, because we're watching all our friends die left and right. We're in the middle of these kind of things that people are dying because they're dying. And, you know, whew, we made it past that day. You know what I'm saying? God let us live another one. But we're not thinking. I'm not thinking past 25.
It's the environment we were bred in, man. It's just
And look, you saying that, and I know what Brownsville is. Hollis was middle class.
Yeah.
We had houses. We're not in projects. And everyone that I dealt with in the house, these niggas was, again, probably just as bad as anyone that you could have grew up with in Brownsville. They had parents that had money. So they, like, we was the brokest in our block. You know what I'm saying? I would go in my friends' houses and take food out their house.
Wow.
No bullshit. You know what I'm saying? Harry and Eddie, Mark, Ralph, all of them. We would go in their house when we knew no one was home and get food so we could get some food. Now, my mother would cook a lot of rice, a lot of potatoes, you know what I'm saying? And that's all you had or whatever. Maybe you had a wish sandwich with just some mayonnaise and some bread, or you toasted it, put some syrup in the bowl. And this is what you ate. You know, you had to watch out for the cereal because the roaches was being it and shit like that.
I ate the roaches too, man.
You know what I'm saying?
It was like
all
the raisins.
All that shit is real. And at the end of the day, you know, a lot of oatmeal, a lot of farina, grits.
Cheese.
But the government cheese don't melt good.
Nah, the government. I don't know where you
you got
at.
It, man.
That
shit would come in lumps. It would lump up in the cheese. You get the bricks
you
of cheese.
You have to thick. That's what happened.
Well,
you
maybe
had to
I wasn't the
thin,
best
yeah.
cut, but you know that's what it was.
There
but
was
at the
times
end of the
where
day,
it was only government cheese in
I know,
my fridge.
This is
like
crazy.
Only when I say only, it was only a block.
We
of cheese
We go get
in
50 cents of fucking bologna. Go to the corner store, 50 cents of bologna and shit like that. Like you know what I'm saying? And that had to make it do like. And I'm not complaining. It just made you go get, you was hungry. You was thirsting. And again, those things, and then you didn't want to struggle. You didn't want to see your parents struggle. You wanted to see your family struggle. You want everyone to get up. But when I tell you all my friends, their parents had good city jobs and had, you know what I'm saying? But they was out selling drugs. We shooting and robbing and all types of dumb shit. And it's like, they didn't
they
have to do that.
Enticed by the environment.
The environment. That's why you are a product of your environment.
Everybody is. Because there are many environments that's the total opposite.
Yeah.
And those kids are also those products of the environment. Look at the suburban's lives we're able to live now, right?
Yes.
So describe your children, right? Totally
and
different.
You know, it's crazy you say that today.